Hello and welcome to the Rogers Brief for November 18th, 2023. I'm Adam Rogers. Thank you everyone for watching and thank you for listening on Apple or Spotify. Just a reminder, I'm supposed to say this every once in a while. If you're enjoying this content, it's appreciated if you leave some comments, like, subscribe, share it, and others can enjoy it as well. So big news probably in law this week was the court decision, federal court decision in Canada on the single-use plastic ban, found to be unconstitutional, and that's so I guess our Sobeys bags might be coming back, or at least our big collections of reusable bags might start diminishing. Programming note, going to be on the Sunday night show, we're going to be on this week, back tomorrow night with Jordan Bonaparte hosting at 9:15 p.m. And so you can check that live on YouTube. Just do a search for Nighttime Podcast or the Sunday Night Show. Either one will get you there. So this week, I'm going to start off talking about this very unusual situation out of the UK. You probably heard this story, the hockey player who was killed tragically on the ice. And now the other player, the player who hit him, has been charged with manslaughter. So I'm going to be talking about that one, see how I think that might unfold. A couple of other national Canadian stories to pick up on. The Cameron Ortiz trial, I've talked about this the last couple of weeks. This is the sort of spy, well, RCMP research intelligence head, Cameron Ortiz, who's on trial for alleged to have been sharing secrets with money launderers and other nefarious individuals. That trial's concluded. It's with the jury. I'll talk a little bit about the closing arguments there. Nathaniel Veltman, this truck attack in 2021 in London, Ontario. That trial has ended with a verdict from the jury. I'm going to go down to the States for discussion of another jury trial, actually this one in Texas, involving a up-and-coming 25-year-old rising star in the U.S. Cycling world. So this got a lot of attention in certain circles, I guess, people that read about the outdoor sports and that kind of stuff talk about that case. And then back to Nova Scotia, a couple of interesting cases. Well, this Tracy Kitch IWK case has been rejected by the Supreme Court of Canada. They're refusing to hear the appeal, but there's been some developments along that case as well. And then another one, there's just a case out of Truro on a drinking and driving case. These ones, they always have little tiny nuances different kind of angles that can be taken, different defenses tried. Here was another one. I'll talk about that one as well. Interesting case at Truro. And then I'm going to end off with just some stuff I've been reading from the International Criminal Court, Chief Prosecutor Karim Khan, who has spent some time on the southern Gaza border. So I'll talk a little bit about how everybody has a perspective on what's going on over in Gaza. What is that of the International Criminal Court and its chief prosecutor? Okay, so let's get back to the United Kingdom. This terrible situation over there. You may have seen the video. This hockey player, Adam Johnson, who played, I think, 13 games with Pittsburgh Penguins in the NHL, has kicked around the European professional leagues, as many do that are sort of on the margins of the NHL and professional leagues, go to Europe and play. He's been doing quite well over there. Was hit with the skate of another hockey player who was in a similar track, Matt Petgrave. No, Adam Johnson's an American. Petgrave is as well. Both playing over in England. Okay, so when you go to law school, you do these contracts cases and litigation cases, and a lot of them originate out of the British legal system. And so as a law student in Canada, you end up learning a lot about cricket. All right, so this is an unusual feature of going to law school, I guess, in a sense. So, you know, a cricket field is next to a housing development, and the cricket ball goes into the backyard, and so you learn, all right, well, who was there first, and these sorts of things. Land usage rules and all that. So you tend to learn a little bit about cricket just by osmosis, in a sense. It seems, of course, it's a very popular sport in England. I take it that hockey is not quite so well established, or at least the rules and the nuances of the game. So Matt Petgrave, the other hockey player, has been charged with manslaughter, all right? So very unusual. Okay, it's not unprecedented for a hockey player on an on-ice incident to be charged criminally. Marty McSorley was charged. He took his stick and deliberately swung at Donald Brashear's head. Todd Bertuzzi with the Moore incident where he sucker punched him from behind. So it can happen. But this is a much different case. So charged with manslaughter. Well, what is manslaughter? I guess that's another question many people wouldn't know off the top of their head. Manslaughter is not murder, and it's not an accident. It's in the middle of those things. So what it means is that there was no... So first degree murder means you planned it out and you deliberately planned to kill somebody. Second degree murder is where you planned to do what you did and it resulted in the death of somebody. Manslaughter is different. There's no intent to kill, but one of two ways you could still kill somebody are through criminal negligence. So something that is objectively dangerous, maybe you didn't intend to kill the person as a result, but what you did was so dangerous that you were negligent to do it, and it ended up with the death of another person. And then the second version of that is if you commit an unlawful act and it ends up killing somebody, then you can be charged with manslaughter as a result of that. Okay, so they haven't said, the UK prosecutors haven't said which of these two angles they're approaching, but it seems most likely that it's the first, that it's criminal negligence. So the check, so there's four players approaching the defensive zone. Johnson has the puck. His own player kind of cuts in front of him as Johnson's swinging around. He's going to almost straddle the blue line. Another player's driving the zone. Matt Petgrave is with the second player, but he's looking at Johnson like he's going to hit him. He's going to give a good body check. Once Johnson's teammate, who's Petgrave is tracking, goes through and clears out, Petgrave is going to slide in behind and check Johnson. Looked like he had him lined up quite well, actually, but either he mistimed it slightly or the other player slowed down to avoid, looked like he was trying to avoid an offside. So he slows down slightly. So as Petgrave is coming through to check Johnson, he clips Johnson's teammate, and Petgrave's skate, his back leg, kind of as he twists, almost like he was trying to do a hip check, clipped the guy in front, and then Petgrave's back leg went flying up. His skate hit Johnson in the neck, and he ended up dying from his injuries. And you look at this. Well, first, okay, so a few things. Petgrave seems to have, nobody seems to be suggesting that any animosity towards Johnson or anything like that. I would say this, you couldn't do this on purpose if you were trying to. It would just be there's too many moving parts, things are happening too fast. If you were trying to, you know, pretend that you got clipped in a certain way and stick your skate up to try to get somebody, it would be nearly impossible to pull that off successfully. To me, this is just, as everybody immediately seemed to be saying, an accident, and a tragic accident, but an accident nevertheless. Curious, so he's been released, Petgrave's been released on bail. He was not released immediately, he had to make bail. I don't think he's still playing. I'd be curious to see whether he has any release conditions that prevent him from playing. If you commit a gun crime, then you're banned from having guns. If you commit a crime or alleged to commit a crime while you're drinking, then you're banned from alcohol or drugs and these sorts of things. So I wonder if he's banned from playing hockey pending the outcome of his trial. It wasn't in any of the articles that I read. But this just seems like a completely inappropriate charge, a misunderstanding of how hockey works. Criminal negligence, like he didn't have the proper, to prove criminal negligence, you would have to say this was an objectively dangerous thing to do. Well, all he was trying to do was make a nice check. It seems like that's what he was trying to do. I haven't heard from Petgrave directly. I don't know if he's been asked about it publicly. He's sure he's been asked about it, but, the poor guy, he must be devastated himself. And I've heard that from other players, seen it on Twitter, that that's been his reaction. And of course it would be. But this is just, to me, a completely inappropriate charge. You wouldn't see this done in Canada. Like the other examples, the McSorley one and the Bertuzzi one, completely intentional acts. This one was a guy going for a hit and, got thrown off balance by another player and just his leg happened to be up in the air. Very unfortunate. So we'll see where that goes. Hopefully that'll be dropped by the prosecution. But, they say that they've consulted experts in the field, where you find hockey experts in England, but I guess there'll be some over there. And then they laid the charge, so I guess they're going to probably proceed with it. Okay, that's enough of that. We'll follow that case as it unfolds. Just something to follow up on, the Cameron Ordis closing arguments took place this week. This was the, I described him as the Ethan Hunt, James Bond kind of person of in the Canadian system, where I don't know if he's an active spy per se, but he is involved in intelligence, involved in trying to, by his account, entice money launderers, high-end money launderers, to use a particular email system, which could then be tracked by the intelligence services in Canada. So one of the things his lawyer pointed to in the closing arguments was that once he apparently was trying to entice various people to use this email service that they had built that was going to have a back end which they could track the flow of messages back and forth from whoever. Well, he got this one target to use the email service, and this was the target which had apparently offered him $20,000 for some information, or he'd asked for $20,000 for some information or whatever, right? But which again, as I mentioned before, seemed like a very small amount for what was taking place. But once the target started using this email service, then Ordis stopped getting in touch with him. So the defense lawyer points to this and says, well, if Cameron Ordis's goal was to milk this source for money, there was the perfect opportunity. He had responded, he was engaged, and Ordis, if money had been his goal, would have kept communicating with him, kept milking the source for more funds, but he didn't do it. Once the guy started using the email service, he stopped communicating with him. So the defense lawyer says, well, this is evidence that Ordis was there to do the job and move on, not there for his own benefit. Seems convincing. Now this is a jury. A jury's deliberating. Now this is a curious one. Much of this case was done in camera, and in camera means it was done without reporters present, without the public present, done secretly. There would still be a transcript of this, but it would not be publicly available to anybody. And in addition, and this again, Ordis's lawyer thinks or argues that this helps his credibility. I agree that there's details of the operations that Ordis is not at liberty to share. Though if he could share it, it would help. So he's talking about having received information on other Canadian sources within the RCMP and CSIS that there might be a mole. He's hearing this from an ally from another country and is trying to act on it and dig into that information. But Ordis, he couldn't say at this trial, of his own trial, what that source was, which country it was, or any of those kinds of details, even though it would certainly have helped his defense to be more specific about that instead of just saying, hey, trust me, this is what happened. Anyway, the jury, I expect, because normally you'd send a jury home for the weekend, come back Monday and deliberate. But because it's such a high-profile situation, and because some of it was heard in camera, I kind of expected that the jury would be deliberating over the weekend. I've checked. This is around noon on Saturday that I'm recording this, and as of now, there's still been no verdict announced. So we'll keep an eye on that. Probably hear from that early in the week. Some of these cases we're hearing, talking about this week, have involved juries, including the next one is Nathaniel Veltman, not taking very long to deliberate. So Cameron Ordus one, that might take a little while, though, for the jury to sort out how they feel about all that. It's a difficult case. Crown saying that he was using secrets and doing things on his own, looking for money. And Ordus says, yeah, I kind of was, but I was doing that for the country and to root out some potential moles in the system. Okay. Next case, Nathaniel Veltman. Convicted, as everybody, I guess, presumed he would be, by a jury of this truck attack in 2021, June of 2021, on a Muslim family, the Asval family. This was in London, Ontario. Four killed and a nine-year-old child was injured. So attempted murder there and murder on the other four. So actually the jury did take 6 hours to deliberate here, but did find him guilty of first-degree murder or terrorism. So this is the question. This is why I wanted to bring this up. This is the first test of, or the first test, the first analysis that will be done of the new terrorism laws, anti-terror laws. So it's a little unusual in this way. The jury found him guilty, but it didn't say guilty of first-degree murder or terrorism. It's one or the other. First-degree murder is the intentional killing of somebody. Terrorism has a more a technical definition. You have to have done it for political, religious, ideological purposes in a way that was meant to intimidate the public or a segment of the public. Seems like it would fit this action. Veltman's would fit that because he targeted this Muslim family who was unknown to him and killed them. So seems like it fits the terrorism definition. But the jury, so the way jury deliberations work in Canada is different than the states, where you can question them. You can't question these jurors to find out, well, did you mean first degree murder or terrorism? All the judge knows is that they found him guilty of that it was an intentional act. So now it'll be up to the judge to make the findings of fact and determine whether it was terrorism or otherwise. In a sense, it doesn't matter for Veltman's sentence. He's going to be in jail for 25 years before he's eligible for parole. What'll matter is at that 25-year time frame, when the parole board goes to review the matter, whether they're reviewing the matter of somebody who's guilty of first-degree murder or terrorism. Of course, terrorism, they're more likely to have an indefinite sentence attached to it if the ideological motivation is still present or still seen to be present at that time. All right, so let's continue. I'm going to go to the United States. We've got a few more things to get through. The only reason this kind of caught my eye is I usually check the usual sources, news websites, and the case reports in Nova Scotia and the Supreme Court of Canada. Well, one of the other things I like to read is Outside Magazine for travel ideas, gear ideas, health and fitness, all this stuff. Outdoor Magazine. Well, there was a story in it this week about this murder of Mariah Wilson, who's a 25-year-old up-and-coming star in the U.S. gravel cycling circuit. Had won some big races and was in Texas for a race called the Gravel Locos race, and was killed there, was shot. So this Caitlin Armstrong was found guilty. Caitlin Armstrong shot Mariah Wilson. This was in May of 2022. And what had happened, Armstrong was an athlete as well, not to the extent of Wilson, but found out that Wilson had dated her boyfriend like the year before, so no real reason other than that. The evidence found that her vehicle had gone past. There was some surveillance video that showed her vehicle in the area of where Wilson was staying. And her DNA, that is Armstrong's, no relation to Lance, I assume, Armstrong's DNA was found on Wilson's bicycle. So that's a curious thing. So after shooting the person, apparently she must have sat on the bicycle or touched the bicycle or something, because her DNA was found on the bicycle handlebars and on the bicycle seat. After she was suspected almost immediately, she fled to Costa Rica. This Armstrong fled to Costa Rica and was on the run for 43 days. Now, it took the jury here 2 hours to deliberate, and this was after a 9-day trial, so a lot of evidence, including Armstrong's former boyfriend, was testified as well. So, 25 years parole ineligibility for Nathaniel Veltman on killing those in Texas. Armstrong is going to jail for 90 years. That's her sentence. Been sentenced to 90 years in jail. That's a little absurd, of course, but that's how the U.S. does things. All right, I'm going to bring it back to Nova Scotia for a couple of cases, and then we'll end with the International Criminal Court. Case, IWK CEO Tracy Kitch, former CEO, of course, now, I guess, had been convicted of fraud over $5,000, alleged to have used her corporate credit card for $47,000 in personal expenses, was sentenced at the trial level to 5 months in jail. This was overturned at the Court of Appeal, who said, well, there might have been, you know, poor accounting, or maybe she breached some internal IWK rules, but that doesn't make it a crime. And they overturned the decision. The Crown appealed that decision to the Supreme Court of Canada, or attempted to appeal that decision to the Supreme Court of Canada. This week, the Supreme Court announced that they are refused leave. So in other words, they are not going to hear the case. Supreme Court of Canada really grants leave maybe in 10% of the time, right? They don't just hear anything. And I guess found that this was not a case of sufficient importance to make it onto their docket. So what happens now? Well, actually, the Court of Appeal, the Nova Scotia Court of Appeal, had not ordered that the conviction be, you know, overturned and she is now not guilty. They had ordered a new trial. And the Crown tried to circumvent that ruling. Instead of going back and doing the new trial properly, according to this Court of Appeal's direction, they went to the Supreme Court of Canada and said, wait a second, the Court of Appeal got this wrong. You should affirm the trial decision. The Supreme Court of Canada refused to do that. So the Crown's first approach was to go to the Supreme Court of Canada and appeal it. But now, in effect, trying to circumvent the Court of Appeal's ruling, now they're going to comply with the Court of Appeal's ruling and have it set down for a new trial before a new judge. Questionable tactics, pretty aggressive. I read the Court of Appeal decision. I thought that was pretty reasonable. I suspect that if a trial judge follows that direction, that they'll probably come to the same conclusion and Kitch will be found not guilty. But a very expensive situation for Tracy Kitch, of course, to deal with, having to defend herself through the Court of Appeal up to leave application to the Supreme Court of Canada. Very extensive documentation required, and so that would be a very expensive situation. Now she's got to go back to trial and do that all over again. So we'll see where that goes. If it turns out they do not get another conviction, curious to see why the Crown is pursuing this particular case and not others, but if they go back and don't get another conviction on this, I think they'd be open to even more criticism for that. All right, another case I want to talk about, this one's out of Truro, a decision of Judge Alain Bégin, and it is King versus Brennan Colley, a DUI case. Thomas Cater, the Crown, Peter Lederman, experienced defense lawyer. People who have followed my Mass Casualty Commission commentary will recognize some of the police officers involved, Constable Dorrington and Constable Patton, both involved in the Mass Casualty Commission investigation. So what happened here, that's not why I'm wanting to cover this story, but what happened here, this child of a police officer was following a truck through around Truro, I think the outskirts of Truro, and truck was swerving badly. Person appeared to be impaired, and so they called it in and said, "I'm following this vehicle." Described the truck. There was a sticker on the back window. Described that. Followed the truck to a certain address. Described the address and went on their way. Soon thereafter, Constables Dorrington and Patton show up at the house. Dorrington felt the truck hood to see how if it was warm. It was. And so they go to the door. Now, notably, the person following the truck was not able to describe the driver. Okay, so they go knock on the door. Mr. Colley comes out. They say, "Were you the driver?" "Yes, I was the driver," he says. "Have you been drinking?" He said he had 4 or 5 beer in the hour since he had arrived home. Well, the police knew that that part wasn't true because of the timing of the phone call from the witness. And so knew he was, well, they arrested him at that point, gave him his rights and charter rights and all those things, police caution. So the question was that the defense was, the attempted defense was whether the police went above and beyond their authority when they knocked on the door and started questioning Mr. Colley. So, what is the result? Well, the judge says the police have an implied license to knock. They can knock on your door. Everybody has the implied right to just come up and knock on your door to further investigate the matter. The defense tried to claim that this was a search and thus a violation of Colley's Section 8 charter rights because they were going into his house and compelling evidence from him. Judge disagrees, says, no, they didn't know who the driver was. They didn't know Colley was the driver. They just went in to start investigating and asked him who the driver was. And so they have the right to knock. The person inside doesn't have to answer the door. When they answer the door, they don't have to say anything. So there's no violation. They're allowed to try to investigate and ask some questions, and it's up to the person answering whether they answer. And so in this case, Colley admitted right away that he was the driver and then lied about how much he had to drink. Definitely lied because his readings came out at 200 and 220, which are way over 4 or 5 beers. So anyway, that was DUI cases. They have, you know, the tiniest little thing. If people think they have a defense to something, they'll try it out. But this didn't work. It was not a charter violation. Okay, last thing, everybody has sort of a take on the situation in Gaza. So does Karim Khan, the International Criminal Court Chief Prosecutor. Now, I follow the International Criminal Court on X, the platform formerly known as Twitter, and my observation of the criminal court is that they seem to do, and Mr. Khan in particular as chief prosecutor, seem to do a lot more speeches and conference attending than they do prosecutions. But what they wanted to do with this letter, and he published in The Guardian, I think other newspapers, he calls this a pandemic of inhumanity. And it is, and to stop the spread of this pandemic of inhumanity, we must cling to the law. He says there's been profound human suffering globally, not only in Gaza, but in Ukraine, Darfur, Afghanistan, other places, and that we cannot normalize or, of course, celebrate these atrocities, as we've seen people doing. He notes that hostage-taking is what he calls a grave breach of the Geneva Convention. So, of course, Hamas took Israeli hostages and continue to hold Israeli hostages. Some have been killed. The International Criminal Court, Prosecutor Khan says, is actively investigating the Hamas actions, into investigating the crimes from the initial invasion and hostage taking and killings. Now, with many of these things, you're waiting to see, all right, how is he going to try to balance this by saying something about Israel? He does say there are no blank checks, even in war. But according to the Rome Statute, under which the International Criminal Court operates, but he doesn't criticize Israel. He instead sort of pumps them up in this way. He says Israel has a professional army, good systems in place to ensure legal compliance. They have lawyers on hand when they make deployment decisions, decisions to fire in a certain location. They have lawyers in place to, examine that, make sure it's in compliance. He said that, hospitals, schools, homes, all these places are presumptively protected and shouldn't be attacked unless there's evidence that they've been turned into turned into a military use by, in this case, Hamas. And so, he says, the Israelis understand that they're going to be held to a high standard. He said, if there's doubt as to whether a home, school, hospital is being used for civilian or military purposes, you need to presume civilian, unless you know. So really the message of it all was that the International Criminal Court is going to be watching this situation very closely and hopefully stepping in with some prosecutions thereafter. So I just thought I'd mention that there's so many different things going on over there, and the criminal court has some teeth and some ability to do things. We'll see if this is just some words or if they're going to follow through with that. So we'll keep an eye on all that. All right, so we'll be watching to see some of these cases as they develop over the week, and we'll be on tomorrow night with Jordan Bonaparte and Paul Palango with the Sunday night show. Looking forward to that. Getting some emails already from the two of them to check on some of the stories. And so we'll see you then if you're around Sunday night. And otherwise, thank you everyone for watching. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.